Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
It's Raising the Vibration right here on LA Talk Radio, and I am your host, Sheena Metal. We're at raisingthevibrationradio.com. We're at latalkradio.com, of course. On social media, you can find me everywhere at Sheena Metal. And of course, Raising the Vibration Radio was born out of a peace movement that I started November 9th of last year. It's called I Am Raising the Vibration of the Nation and the World. And we're at iamraisingthevibration.com. Please join us. We have a great Facebook page. I try to post something there every day. Like us on Facebook. Coming later in the summer, we're going to be adding a website. I'm going to be adding a blog called Vibration Nation. We'll be kicking up our vibration social media and also more things. I have my first speaking engagement in Los Angeles on July 8th, and we'll talk more about that as we get closer to that. So my guest, every week on the show I have guests that I really feel are doing their thing to make the world a better place. And this guest is certainly no exception. She's a wonderfully talented actress and writer and producer and does solo performances and is an amazing character actress. We've all seen her on American Horror Story. And she just always has this really, really amazing centered attitude about what she does and a positivity that I love. And that's why she's here. So please welcome to the show today my very good friend, Naomi Grossman. How are you, buddy?
Oh, thank you. I'm well. Of course. I have to be well after an intro like that.
Oh, well, thank
you. That's the whole point. I'm centered and happy.
I aim to please. So that's what it's about, though, right? It's not just about doing what you love. Mm-hmm. It's about doing what you love and loving everybody around you as you do it. Mm-hmm. Or what's the purpose of it?
Right. I mean, we have a choice, right? How we want to live our lives. And why choose the other way, you know?
I had a couple guests on my show last week. My friend Paul Dooley, you know, he's a character actor. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you know him. I think he's about to turn 90, or mm-hmm. has just turned 90. And he was here with, he's doing a one-man show right now. He did it for Fringe last year. Mm-hmm. Now he's doing it at Theater West and doing it with his friend Donovan Scott, who's directing it. They were both here. They met on Popeye. When Paul was Wimpy and Donovan was Olive Oil's brother, Castor Oil, and they became friends on the set, and they've been like lifelong buddies. Mm. And we were talking about how every time you do a project, you make a new friend.
Mm-hmm.
And actors that go onto a set, or directors, or crew, or whomever, and they don't go looking to make a friend, are really missing out. Because oh, yeah. part of the best part of it is making friends.
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, that's how I live my life. I went to a lesbian wedding on a yacht over the weekend and woke up Sunday morning in a bed full of gay guys. So,
oh my God.
Yeah.
And that's like my fantasy day.
We're going to the SLS pool later if you want to join us.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I don't even know these people, but you know, they're my new best friends. I mean,
but that's how it is. You just pick, you collect people as you go.
Yes.
And you pick people up, and that's how you and I met. You did my
that's
show.
That's true.
And that was it. And yeah. then we became friends. And it's I think sometimes people go, well, if I make friends, it's going to get in the way of my career. Mm-hmm. Or no, because that's part of what your career is.
Mm-hmm.
Picking people up along the way and growing our tribe, that's part of what it means to be an actor, because being an actor is a very tribal thing.
Well, and it's all about being present and receptive.
Yes.
You know, if you're able to, I mean, that is what acting is, right? It's reacting. So
yeah.
if you're giving me something that I like, then I'm going to come back at you with something comparable. And I think, and that's why we make friends. That's why we're social beings. And that's why, yes and. I'm yes anding everything you're saying.
Right. And it's also about not just reacting, acting, but it's also about being a sponge mm-hmm. and being an empath. Mm-hmm. And taking in everything around you mm-hmm. so that somewhere down the road you can take what you've sucked in from the world and use it in a character that you have to be.
Absolutely. Well, that's why I definitely find myself in positions where, you know, you can choose one path or the other. And sometimes I choose the path that is a little more precarious, but often it yields a much more interesting story. And having great stories, whether they, you know, make it on stage or just, you know, entertain the cocktail party I'm at, that's what I live for. Really having, you know, stories to tell.
Yeah, and that's what it's about. And it's and also I think that we're the minstrels mm-hmm. of current day, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're storytellers.
Mm-hmm.
And for you and I, it's not just that we tell other people's stories as actors. We also spend even more time than that telling our own stories.
Right.
You do it through solo performances, and I do it through stand-up, and I do it through radio. Mm-hmm. And it's important that then all of that stuff that we've sucked into our lives comes out for other people. And underneath the laughter and the art are the lessons that people learn mm-hmm. from listening to something and going, oh, I did that, or oh, that happened to me, or I felt that same way when it happened to me, and now I feel so much better. Mm-hmm. And that's how we heal.
Yes. No, I often think, I mean, I've had so many lives, and they would be wasted if I were just, you know, a realtor or a whatever. Nothing against realtors,
sure.
But they're not, they don't have the same platform.
Right. Well, that's not your calling.
No.
That's not what you do.
No, it's very, my calling is very clear.
And do you ever wonder, and when I said heal, I didn't mean heal us, although it does heal us. I meant that's how we heal other people.
Right.
People come to see a show and they think, oh, I'm going to go see Naomi. She's going to be funny. She's going to make me laugh. And then they go see your show and they learn all of this stuff.
Right.
And they walk away thinking, oh, you know what? I feel better about that thing because it happened to me too. Or if she seems so together and she had this, then it's okay that I had this.
Yeah.
And that's how the healing work is done. And I hope that's what people take away from every hour I'm on the radio for the last 23 years. Somebody says, oh, you know what? That happened to me. And now I feel better because I think people have innately just a few things they need outside of the typical food and shelter and water. People need to love and be loved. Mm-hmm. They need to believe they have a purpose in the world, and they need to believe that they're good at something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really all we need. If we have those things, we're fine. If we have people that love us and people we love, we do something that we think makes a difference, mm-hmm. and we feel like we have a thing that we're good at, so we're serving a purpose mm-hmm. to the bigger whole, then we're fine. It's not really a lot to think about when you break it down like that.
Yeah. For a while, thought that acting was only self-serving. Like, I, you know, it was, I had a mission to do this thing, and it was about me.
I did too when I was young.
Right? Yeah. And I thought, you know, I did want to be on the sides of buses and hopefully not being hit.
Sure.
But, you know.
Right. I just want to not get hit by the bus.
Right. Well, there's that too. But, and it wasn't until actually I found out that I was affecting people, you know, that I would get fan mail or art, say, that would that showed me, no, I'm actually touching people. Like, my art is inspiring others' art. And I realized, no, this is not just about me. This is not about, you know, fame and fortune. Certainly not fortune, not yet. Working on it. but it is about affecting others, and that's a beautiful
Absolutely.
Thing.
Well, and I think it's interesting because, and we'll talk about American Horror Story a little bit. You know, first of all, one of the scariest shows ever to be on TV. And when we first saw you in season two in Asylum, I think that was the scariest year. Mm-hmm. I think that was just the creepiest.
Yeah.
Of all the years. I don't know why, but it just, everything was in it that freaks me out.
Everyone.
From mental
that.
Institutions to aliens, like everything.
Mm-hmm.
So here in the middle of it is this Pinhead character mm-hmm. that you played, Pepper, and an innocence to her, even though she's obviously in the institution for killing somebody, we think, at the time. But there's just a... And you realize when you see her, and I always think about that scene where Jessica Lange's doing the banana faux fan mm-hmm. and you're singing with her.
Mm-hmm.
There's, and you realize that as human beings in our post-millennial technological world, one of the things that we're lacking is innocence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we need to find innocence in things, and we miss our own innocence because mm-hmm. now we know everything. And you hear something, you go on the news, and there's 55 people telling you what it is. Mm-hmm. We don't just feel anymore like we're safe or we're okay or the world's going to take care of itself. And especially since what's happened in this country since the election, mm-hmm. we live in a full-blown fighting panic, people throwing bricks at each other mm-hmm. metaphorically and sometimes literally. We need characters that remind us that sometimes you just want to play with a ball of yarn and make some bread.
Right.
And that's okay. And so I think that's a lot of why people were so attracted to that character. And you, it's funny because I know you now as, you know, you're a very smart, very sharp, you know, sassy kind of chick. And but you, the innocence in you, you really put that into her.
Yeah, well, obviously, she and I don't have that much in common. I mean, I like yarn, but...
Yeah, I mean, I like yarn, too, but it's, I don't play with it all that much. No. But there's an innocence in you that came out in that character.
Well, and I think that's what was crucial, because, you know, so oftentimes actors find, you know, whatever they relate to about with that other... their character. We don't have a whole lot in common other than my own... true desire and need to play. I love to play. May not be with yarn, but I'm a very playful, whimsical, fun friend. And so, yeah, I mean, I could totally tap into that. And that was really enough.
And it's interesting because, I don't know, I know both you and I were sort of raised by intellectual people, educated people. Mm-hmm. You just talked about many past lives, and I certainly have many as well. So we're old souls. Mm-hmm. And also, I don't know about you, but I was kind of born 50.
Mm-hmm.
So even as a kid, I was very focused on being an adult and the things that I wanted. So it's sort of been a process for me in my life to find and capture that innocence and make sure that I keep it. Whereas a lot of kids are just as kids, and they kind of have to grow up. I kind of had to grow young.
Yeah, no, I feel the same way. I feel like I was such an adult when I was a kid.
Me too.
Because, you know, you were an only child.
I'm an only child. You are too.
Yeah. So, you know, we were playing with our parents' friends. And by playing, I mean sitting quietly discussing, you know, Ronald Reagan or whatever.
Right. And I don't know about you, but my parents were readers.
Yeah.
So there were always books. There was always, like, you know, PBS on. And there was always book reading. Or they were taking me to plays or to the opera or to ballet.
Yes.
Always culturing me. It wasn't like we all just kind of sat around and played Twister while my parents got drunk. You know, so I'd go to friends' houses and I'd be like, wow, this is like a zoo.
Right.
What's happening here? And then I'd go home and my house would be very quiet and my parents would be watching Nova.
Oh my God, exactly. Right? No, we were allowed two shows. And when I say we, I just mean me and my dad, who also watched. My mom never.
Didn't like the TV?
No, it's a boob tube. You know, it rots the brain. But if there was anything that wouldn't rot it, it was Charles Kuralt's Sunday Morning.
Oh, right.
You know, poetry and leaves falling or whatever.
Right.
And
riding around in that trailer, seeing America.
Yes. And Carl Sagan's Cosmos. So, you know, which is Nova adjacent. So, you know, between that and... So I would be, you know, sneaking sitcoms, you know.
Right.
And mom would read the dictionary... You know, she would read me the dictionary to sleep. Pretty boring.
Wow, now my home kind of seems like a circus. My mom was, here's the 5-minute story everybody knows. Born very poor in an Irish ghetto in Kentucky, orphaned very young. My grandmother died when she was 6. Institutionalized in an orphanage for years. People would pick her up for foster care and use her as a farmhand and take her back. Mm. And then she was adopted by my grandparents. And my grandmother at the time was a very well-known child psychologist. And she was very much always about... My mom used to say that she was brilliant with the theories and of psychology. She could quote anybody. She could identify anything. But if you put her in front of a person, she panicked.
Mm.
So she was raised kind of in this... educate yourself. And she did, and she's thankful that she had that. But I think because she never got to be a kid, she was always instilling in me, you have to do normal things. You have to be like a normal person. And she would sort of make me go out and play with kids. And then I kind of came, you know, out of the box 50, and I'd be like, oh, they're such kids. And she'd be like, but it's good for you. So my mom loved art, and she loved television, and she loved movies. And she was always looking for things that had a little more innocence and a little more levity to them, because she could get a little depressed, because, you know, we're Irish.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. She was better about, I could watch more TV, and she was always encouraging me to get into, like, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, but always, you know, Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew, but always things that were not dummied down to kids.
Right.
But at the same time, were light.
Yeah, I mean, I do think...
And dark.
I decided I wanted to work in television because I was denied it all that time.
Oh, interesting.
And, you know, I remember actually watching that film Clueless, and the only way I could get away with watching it was that it was, you know, based on a Jane Austen novel.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
How did I not know that?
Oh,
no.
Yeah.
What is it based on?
Isn't it? Well, now I sound like an idiot. Emma?
Oh, is it?
Is that a movie?
That is a,
or
that
is a book,
that is
rather?
A book, yeah. And was a great movie with Gwyneth Paltrow.
I've been out of the house too long. I would know that. Yeah, but, you know, I have to say, though, I rebelled against all that intellectualism. You know,
yeah.
Our dinners were Spanish dinners. My parents were Peace Corps volunteers in the 60s. And so they were hell-bent on me becoming bilingual. And so we spent our dinners speaking exclusively Spanish. And, you know, teenagers, we don't want to...
Do you still speak Spanish?
We don't speak anything. Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay, so it stuck at least.
Oh, 100%. Although it stuck because I later lived in Argentina and became a Spanish major and fell in love with a dozen hot Latin lovers. And
Yeah. Okay.
And my dad's...
So you know how to talk dirty
lives
in Spanish.
In Uruguay now.
Right.
Yeah. I'm Latina light. But the point is, you know, yes, I really did resist.
I get it. Yeah.
It and then, as we were saying, at a certain point, started to regress. Like I was like, okay, I've been such an adult for so long. I mean, I got my SAG card when I was 15 years old, and then you know, kind of didn't work for a while after that. I think it was just a matter of me. I was such an adult. I needed to be a kid for a little bit.
Me too. And I think it's so important. And I think now, especially, it's so important that we live in a world where. I mean, I don't know about you, but I pretty much think every second of the rest of my life is accountable, is accounted for.
Ah.
I mean, there are more things. I look at the list of things I want to do in my life, and I'm like, I'm just not going to live this long. And there's so many projects I want to do and so many things I want to get involved in. And it's way more than the years I have left. So for me, it's important to say, I can take a day and just go follow my nose and go somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
I can take a day and be with a friend and go do something I've always wanted to do. You know, I closed a musical on Sunday, and I had the night before been at a wedding in Topanga Canyon at this beautiful place I'd never been to before. And there was a gift shop full of Buddhas and things, but of course I couldn't go in because I had to be a wedding guest. Like, I'm not complaining, but still. Mm-hmm. So on Sunday, after the play was over, I got in the car. It was that 115 degrees day. Mm-hmm. And I drove to Topanga Canyon and just drove through to the beach. And just, like, took a day for myself. Stopped at the Native Spirit Lodge and got some carved stone things and went to the Psychic Guy bookstore and wandered around and smelled all the incense and just kind of took a day for me. Mm-hmm. And it's okay to do that. I have to remind myself I don't have to always be home being so driven.
Mm-hmm.
Because we only have so many days, like you said.
Right.
And it's about being present. And part of being present is sometimes taking a day and just making it like a refresh, rejuvenate, and rehabilitate day.
Right. I'm very good at doing that when I'm away. You know, I'm in Copenhagen.
Okay.
What else do I do? You know, I've got to shack up in Christiania or whatever, you know, like win in Rome sort of things. But I don't do that at home. And it's important. I agree. I need to go to the psychic guy and
do it.
And yeah.
Just smell the oils.
I love it.
And just be there with the ding, ding, ding chime music and just chill. You know, and when I founded this peace movement, there were two things that were very important to me about it. Three things. One, that it was void of negativity. Mm-hmm. So never post negative stuff there.
No.
And some self-help stuff can be kind of negative. It's always like, don't focus on the one who broke your heart. Focus on the people who deserve it. Well, there's kind of a negative connotation to that.
Yeah.
Great for other people's self-help sites does not belong on mine. It's all pure lessons of positivity.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing was, I wanted to be utterly bipartisan, although I'm sure sometimes it doesn't seem that way because a lot of the people I quote are people that I've loved throughout history that were very progressive, like Eleanor Roosevelt and
right.
Gandhi and Abraham Lincoln. And then the other thing was, I wanted to be completely interfaith.
Mm.
Because I believe all roads lead to the same place,
mm-hmm.
and that we all believe in the same thing, we just believe in it in a different way, well, except for some people who, you know, believe in hurt and hate and anger and chaos. But most of us, you know, are all on the same path. We're just taking different roads to get to the destination.
Yes.
And so I realized that I didn't want to be a hypocrite, and there were some faiths I didn't know much about. And so I have started learning about the Catholic religion because mm-hmm. I was not raised Catholic. I'm an Irish Protestant. Please, no one show up at my door and shoot me in the face. And I've started learning about saints, right? Because saints were like badass people mm-hmm. who did amazing things on the earth. Mm-hmm. And so much that the church went, wow, you're amazing. But some of the stuff these people did, you know, like there is a Saint Isidore who is the saint, patron saint of the internet. So he was born in 3-something A.D., but Pope John Paul II in the 90s made him the patron saint of the internet. And in at this time, 300-something A.D., his thing was that he was attempting to record and write down everything that had ever happened in the history of the world.
Oh, jeez.
Which is kind of cool that he's the internet
And you thought
saint.
Your to-do list was
right?
long.
Right? So it's cool that he is the patron saint of the internet, because now the internet has kind of done that.
Yeah.
It's a place where everybody pitches in, and so much of the world's history is there.
Oh, wow.
But that long ago, he knew that it was important that we all know what we had done in the history of man.
Interesting.
So you learn cool stuff about cool people like that.
Cool.
And you realize, the more you learn about, the more you realize that that there are so many amazing and inspiring people in the world. Because
mm-hmm.
I think sometimes, if you just are on the internet or you're just in mass media, you hear a lot about the douchiness.
Oh, yeah.
The shooters, the killers, the politicians acting like self-centered a-holes.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear enough about the good things. Like, remember when we were kids, and you're much younger than me, so I don't know if it was still that way when you were a kid, the news would be full of, like, human interest stories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd open a People magazine, and there would be stories about somebody, some guy that, like, climbed Mount Everest with one leg, or just
yeah.
people that did great stuff. Now it seems like it's all scandal and bad stuff.
Yeah. Well, and now you can just so much as open your computer and see get somebody get shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's nobody curating it. It's just...
No, and you go and you get the top stories for the day, and 9 out of 10 of them are
yeah.
something negative.
It's
oh,
true.
God, here's a reason to be fearful.
Yeah.
So we need to find ways to keep ourselves out of fear.
Yeah.
And, you know, for some people, it's to escape, never turn the news on, watch shows on Netflix that make them laugh, and live their lives.
Well, it's kind of ironic that I would have, you know, found my success in horror, because I am not a fearful person. I'm inherently just trusting and loving, and
yeah.
I want to believe. I don't know. I've done all sorts of sort of fearless things in my life, and I just don't think about them. I just go with it. I want to believe the world is good, and it, for the most part, it's worked out for me. You know, I bought a car on eBay.
Really?
Yeah.
How did you know that was going to be okay?
I didn't. I knew exactly what I wanted. I put out on my little vision board, you know, I wanted a hunter's green, a racing green a convertible Miata with tan interior and with such and such amount of miles and such year, and boom. And eBay is where it happened to be. You know, we choose what we want, but not necessarily how we get it or where it comes from.
That
so,
is amazing.
Bam. Anyway, I just use that as an example.
Now, what
of,
year Miata? I mean, do they still make the Miata?
This was a long time ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You did eBay a long time ago.
I did
ago.
eBay a long time ago, no less.
Wow.
So, you know, did it work out? Like, I didn't drive here in it.
Oh, okay.
It didn't end up lasting. It wasn't, listen, it wasn't terrible, though. I mean,
yeah.
I'm just saying, like, that is a thing I've done. I mean, when I was 17 years old, I left home for Argentina and lived with some host families for
and
a
then,
year.
And then hot Latin men.
And hot Latin men followed. So.
And don't you go to Burning Man?
Oh, 100%. I went on a first date to Burning Man.
Okay, that would be Burning Man. This is my year to get out of my comfort zone.
Okay.
I decided because 2016 was such a train wreck year, not for, only for me, but for everybody. But I mean,
the world.
I lost my mom. My best friend got cancer. I wound up in the hospital and almost died with my heart at the end of the year. And I was like, I was in a freeway accident, just sitting on the freeway in traffic. Somebody plowed into me at full speed.
Oh.
So I thought, you know what? Obviously, the universe is trying to tell me something.
Yeah.
And maybe it's that I need to get out of my comfort zone and overcome the things that scare me so that I can move to the next level of my personal evolution. Because all of those things that were so horrible, the things I always feared, right? Somebody hitting me with a car because I was in a bad accident on the freeway when I was 23. My heart just stopping for no reason, because when you're an overweight person, people always go, you're going to have a heart attack, you're going to have a heart attack. My mom dying, which I thought I wouldn't survive for many years. My best friend then, who is my closest family, getting sick and worried she was going to pass. But then I survived. I had a stalker. I went through a horrible breakup. But I went through all that stuff and I lived.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, what else can I survive? So this is my year to get out of my comfort zone, and I've been doing it. And it's terrifying. So one thing that's completely out of my comfort zone is the idea of going to Burning Man.
The idea of not showering for a week.
The idea of being someplace hot with that many people that you can't get in or out of, where there's like no real bathrooms.
No.
That just completely mortifies me.
But so go on a date. But with no real bathroom.
But was it a date for 4 days?
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean,
how did that go?
Well, you know, it didn't end well, ultimately.
But I mean, how did that immediate
for a first
weekend
date, it was great. Listen, if had he invited me to dinner and a movie, I don't think there'd have been a second date.
Okay.
But because it was this epic, like, it was like honeymooning on the moon. Literally, it was just like there is nothing familiar about that place. Everything about it is upside down and in a beautiful, exciting, scary, fearless way. That, if you're looking to change it up, there's nothing better.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'll tell you an interesting story about Burning Man. So I have a friend who was in this great marriage. I mean, one of those marriages you wish you were in and I never have been. Fantastic relationship, and one day she literally walked out of the bathroom and he had had a stroke.
Oh.
So what followed afterwards was her taking care of him for like, I think, 6 or 7 years. And then that sort of ending her acting career because, you know, actually, she was in Asylum.
Oh.
And Barbara Tarbuck.
Of course.
And then she did a one-woman show where she told the story of how she took his ashes to Burning Man and put him in the fire. And it was a huge success. She did it all over town. It was the completion of her story. And then she got a really bizarre disease and died in less than a month.
Yes. Just last year.
Just at the end of last year. And isn't that interesting? That she had to tell that story to complete her story. And people who don't know Barbara, she was such a super spiritual, kind of a sage as a person.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I was going through this really crazy thing when I was going through the stalking, and I said, I just don't even know what I did to deserve this. And she said, let me tell you something, honey. Sometimes it's just them.
Mm-hmm.
And I always think about that now when people get weird. Mm-hmm. But for her to have to, for so long, to want to tell that story of how she said goodbye to her husband at Burning Man. And I don't know if you went and saw it, but it was amazing.
I wish I'd known.
And I remember she was so jumping all over and jumping up on benches, and she was 73 years old, and I thought, you know what? When I grow up, I want to be Barbara Tarbuck.
Yeah.
And then out of the blue for her to get that freaky thing nobody's ever heard of, and then didn't even last a month, and she was gone.
Ugh.
Maybe you're just here to do what you're here to do,
yeah,
and to overcome a certain amount of fears. And when you've told your story and your story's over, mm-hmm, it's time to go home.
Yeah, no, I believe that.
I mean, you have to think about it like that, right?
I mean, I definitely think she wasn't going to go till she told that story.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I have certain stories like that in my life that are not resolved. And until they are, you know, I'm here.
I do too.
Well, and I just have insane genes. My grandma smoked a pack a day every day till she was between the age of 13 and 93, and then finally died, but only because they took away her cigarettes.
Really?
She just didn't want to live without them.
I think my mom needed something to fight against. She was a Scorpio, she was Irish, and she was a fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for 50 something years she protected the world from my dad. I used to call her the Dragon Keeper. And when he died, she'd always go, oh, God, when he dies, I'm going to do a jig. And because he had a bad heart, and from the time, like 2 years before I was born, the doctors kept saying he won't live another year, she never divorced him because she kept thinking he was going to die.
Oh.
And he finally died at 87. It wasn't even his heart. He had brain cancer.
Oh.
And instead of doing a jig, she didn't, I think, know what to do with herself without that fight. And
yeah.
I think she kind of died of a broken heart.
Yeah.
And I think she just really didn't want to live without something to fight against, and she had become too physically incapacitated to really fight.
Mm-hmm.
And because she was on a walker and sometimes on a wheelchair and at home on a cane, she just didn't feel like she could go out and take on the world. I think she just didn't want to live like that. And one day she just stopped breathing.
Yeah. No, I believe. I mean, that's it's all about
say,
what
bye-bye.
We're saying. You have a purpose. And, I mean, I'd like to think my grandma was meant for bigger things than just smoking cigarettes. But I don't know.
Who knows?
I mean, her mom, or sorry, aunt, died at 108.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, something kept her ticking that long. Wasn't cigarettes, that's for sure. But... yeah, I mean, I like you, I have a long list, a
Me
to-do
too.
List, and so I think I'm going to be here.
Me too, a long time.
Yeah, well, and I found myself, you know, like, for example, that time when I was in Argentina, I fell in love, not just with all the Latin lovers, but...
Oh, them too.
Them too. But just with life there, like, that is a place, like we were talking about, that I could just be present and just live. But at the end of the day, you really do need to do something with yourself. And I realized, like, you know, I do have a mission. I do have a purpose. It is to, you know, entertain and bring joy and tell stories. And you know, it's going to be pretty hard for me to do that there, or at least at the kind of scale that I wanted to make that happen. So, you know, I had to end up, you know, leave that and just know that it'll be there for me. And this way, shoot, you know, AHS is broadcast there.
Oh, my God, that's fantastic.
You know,
do you think you'll wind up there eventually?
Maybe one day. Yeah.
Okay.
Although, you know, it's not like I'm trying to retire.
That's where a lot of your Pepper fans, coincidentally enough,
have a lot of Pepper
came
fans
from
there.
Argentina. They probably didn't even know at the time.
They didn't.
Isn't that interesting?
I mean, granted, I definitely stoked that fire, you know.
Yeah.
When you tweet.
But you stoked all fires, not just theirs,
are you kidding?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you,
for
you,
sure.
You stoked every fire.
Oh, every fire.
I remember when I first looked you up, because I thought, is this a real person with a pinhead person?
Right.
I mean, I didn't think we could say pinhead anymore, but apparently that's what they called her on the show, so that's what I'm going to say.
Right.
So I was like, well, how sweet that they hired this person who's a pinhead. And then I was like, oh wait, she's not. And then I saw that you had a page for her where you tweeted as her. Mm-hmm. I thought, oh my God, this chick is so cool, I gotta get her on the show. That is the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Well, you weren't the only one that thought that. I mean, people
what a great
on
idea.
Set wondered. Yeah, I mean, I don't tweet from that handle anymore because, you know, it's over.
Right, but, right, right.
But yeah, why not?
Pepper too went home.
Yeah.
Oh. I have to tell you, to date, that was my favorite episode of American Horror Story. Was the episode in season 4 in Freak Show where they showed the entire arc of the Pepper story.
Yeah, it was.
You were brilliant. I mean, you were just brilliant. You know how many actors, how many good actors I know, and how many people sit across from the microphone here with me? You should always look at that and be so proud. I mean, everything you did on that show, but I mean, that episode especially.
Well, it was very special. It was kind of, I consider it a love letter to fans, because let's face it, I think had fans not reacted to her the way they did, they probably wouldn't have brought her back. Never mind giving her a whole backstory like that. So it's really a testament to the world we're living in now, you know? Like, it's a two-way street. We're communicating. And when you tweet to the creators and your favorite television stars what you like or don't like, The network's watching. They're listening.
Isn't that amazing?
So, yeah. Who knew? I mean, that's
pretty
cool.
You were kind of like American Horror Story's Urkel.
Right.
Like, you were just supposed to be on one, and then suddenly you came back.
Yeah. Or I always think of it as kind of like, you know, American Idol. Like, people dialed...
Yeah.
Dialed P for Pepper, and they, you know, they got what they wanted. It's cool.
But that, I think, is something that's very encouraging about the internet. Because
yes.
I know people talk about energetically and spiritually the good and the bad things about the internet. One of the great things, I think, is that people who are watching the shows, who to me are the most important people, because
mm-hmm.
they're the ones you're making the shows for, actually now their opinions count.
Right.
And they used to never count, no matter how much somebody loved a show. If a show was a show that was geared towards a show about housewives in the 50s, no matter how many 50s housewives loved it, a guy in a suit somewhere would go, I think this show kind of sucks and nobody likes it, and it would go away.
Mm-hmm.
But now they are forced by the numbers on the internet
mm-hmm.
to look at social media and look at boards and look at emails and look at call-ins and say, oh, wow, we have to keep this person on the show.
Right.
And to me, that's giving the power back to the people.
I agree.
And I love that. Because, and I'm hoping now in politics, since this election, with the proactive protesting, with people deciding to run for local offices, with people getting behind campaigns, with people calling their congressmen and senators and mayors and governors, that we are now also realizing that our country was set up by our founding fathers as a democracy for people to have power.
Right.
And we need to, all we need to do is take that power back.
Right.
Because we've allowed that power to go away.
Well, and it goes back to what you were talking about before in terms of choosing. Like, on the internet, you can choose to be some creepy little troll that, you know, badmouths people for she's so this or that, you know. Or we can encourage and uplift and,
yes,
and elevate.
Exactly.
Which they have me, and I appreciate it. I'm where I am because of it.
Yeah, me too.
But, I mean, I just like you said, you know, we get to choose. When I sit down to make a social media post, I make a conscious decision.
Me too.
Not to be negative about that.
Me too. I mean, and we have a decision, Naomi. When you have 100 people who've tweeted you that day, mm-hmm, and 99 are good comments and one is you're fat,
yeah,
do you choose to, because some people focus in on the one bad one and they spend the whole day tweeting with the troll, trying to convince the troll, I'm okay and I'm not what you said and I'm not fat and I'm good and shut up, that they're completely ignoring the 99 people who said something nice.
Right.
And I think as human beings, one thing that I've learned just watching the world, not only post-election, but also, you know, the year of the election before, is that we need to grab ourselves by the scruff of our necks and pull ourselves out of our negative story, mm-hmm, which mm-hmm is where we are more worried about charming people who don't like us, mm-hmm, than we are about being reinforcing to people who are telling us they do.
Right.
That's a weird human trait.
It is. But like you said, we only have so much time in this world. So why would we waste it, squander it away on convincing these trolls that we're not fat? I mean, who cares?
Who cares?
If you're fat, fine. You
great.
Got a mirror. You probably know that already. If
who
you're
cares?
Not, then okay, great. Like,
fantastic.
Good for you. Like, whatever.
What,
like,
yeah.
Oh, you're comfortable in the airplane. I don't know. Like, who cares?
If you're not fat, you're probably more comfortable on the airplane than I am. Well, something really interesting that I learned, that I was talking about yesterday on my Haunted Playground show, my spiritual paranormal show. Have you done that show with
no.
me?
No.
Oh, you need to come do that show with me on Tuesday afternoons. That when we were talking about posting negativity, I was doing kind of a roundup show with psychics. When somebody, like, I respond to, when I have time, when I do a thread on Facebook, I respond to everybody who says something. And now I don't have a lot of time, so sometimes it's just a heart. Sometimes mm-hmm. I'll do a heart, then I'll say thanks. Somebody else will get a heart. I'll answer somebody. Somebody else will get a heart. If you say something negative, you get a smiley. So you should know if you don't get a heart
oh boy.
That it wasn't positive. Uh-huh. But nobody gets a negative response. And it's because trolls are looking for a negative response. And if you give it to them, then they're going to run wild. If you hit them with a positive response, I've noticed, I follow Chelsea Clinton on Twitter, and I've noticed that when people send her really nasty stuff, and whoo, people send her some nasty stuff, she'll send something back to them and said, thank you so much, and I hope you have a beautiful morning. And I'm like, you know, they're just like,
oh, it makes them crazy.
Because people want you to get angry. And if you don't get angry, you diffuse it.
Yeah.
Now, if I ignored them and put a heart with everybody else and they'd go, see, I really got her because I didn't get something. But I'd give them something, too. Everybody gets something with a smile. Because that's what negativity can't stand, because negativity and positivity can't exist in the same place.
Right.
So you don't give them what they want.
Well, and we only have so much time. Like, why would I allow some total stranger to...
I know.
To take away my happy, my good day. You know, it's a beautiful day. Why would I?
And to bring down the people that love whatever you're doing.
Right.
That have also taken time out of their busy lives to tweet you.
Yes.
But you know, and you probably know this in your personal life, because I certainly do. People that spend so much time trying to get someone who doesn't want anything to do with them to pay attention to them. I mean, especially like in dating and romance, right?
God.
And then completely ignoring the person who is like so into them.
Yeah.
Because they're like, it's too nice. I really like this person who treats me like crap.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need to get out of that thinking and
yeah.
move into a different way of thinking, because
yeah.
We are so excited about charming something that we think isn't interested in us.
It's true.
And I don't know what... And I think as actors, we do that in our careers all the time. We're so worried about, well, who's the one person that isn't watching our show? Who cares?
Yeah.
Enough people are watching the show. Get them to tell their friends to watch.
Right.
That one person's never going to like it.
They're not going to please everyone.
And they've already told you they don't like it. So who cares? Move on to the next.
Right. We all have our people. And they're not everyone is going to be on...
Right.
You know, in your camp.
Team Pepper.
And that's okay.
Although I don't know how anybody could not have been Team Pepper.
Aww.
But, you know, right. Not everybody is going to like what you do, dig what you do, understand you, want to be your friend. And you wouldn't want to be friends with those people anyhow.
No. No.
Because those are the people that don't. It took me a long time in my life because I had a lot of insecurities surrounding other people. I think only children, we socialize later than other kids because we're not always around kids from birth.
Mm-hmm.
And also I think we tend to be very solitary because we're used to, you know, playing Monopoly with ourselves.
Right.
And so when we go out into the world and other kids are more toughened up by other kids, the kind of brazenness of people can kind of, for a while, it takes us a while. So it took me a long time to realize, and by a long time, I mean just in the last 5 years or so, and I just turned 50, to realize that people who don't want to be my friend aren't supposed to be my friend.
Right.
And that's totally okay.
No, I mean, I feel like with you were talking about dating, it's
same
way.
Oh, yeah, that is the nth power.
Like, half the time, I'm like, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for being a psycho. I don't have to waste another second.
Like, you should do a show called Thank You for Being a Psycho.
Right?
That would be a total great one.
No, but
show.
It's such a great one. Like, you know, I could have wasted years with you, but you dropped trow in my living room within, you know, the... or whatever. You did something, like, wildly inappropriate.
Why do I think that really happened?
Oh, of course it did. I mean, you don't just come up with that. But, you know, you did something just totally inappropriate in every way. And for that, not only do I, you saved me the turmoil of being with you anymore, but I now have a great story that I can, you know, maybe one day say on the radio.
I have a great story that I can call my best friends with and go, you want to laugh? This happened today.
Yeah.
And then they can completely laugh. I just had that happen a couple of days ago with somebody that I was sort of dating, and this really bizarre question it just got so odd. And it was so obvious what this person was trying to ask me.
Mm.
But it was, I had to actually finally come out and say, are you trying to ask me if it's okay if we're together and you date somebody else at the same time? Or, I mean, you hate to have to come out and spell it out, but I just wanted to make sure I wasn't crazy.
No, and I think it's important to spell stuff out.
Yeah. And then I just basically said, look, here's the thing. I have no problem with people that aren't into monogamy. That's their deal. And if everybody's happy and everybody... My mom used to say, as long as everybody knows what everybody's doing, it's okay.
Right.
But I have enough trouble in my life keeping track of one person.
Yeah.
I certainly can't keep track of more than that.
Well, I like your... thank you for being a psycho pitch.
Oh my God, I'm
Although
serious.
I was actually feeling something comparable to what you were saying, which is, you know, full disclosure. I am very big on full disclosure.
Yeah.
I have been on a date with a quadriplegic. Didn't tell me he didn't have, you know, use of his limbs.
Well, where did you meet him?
Well, it was a setup.
Okay.
His profile picture was from the neck up. So, you know, there
and
was no
set
way
you
of
up
knowing.
Didn't tell you either?
Didn't mention that. And listen, makes for a great story. But again, kind of probably should have warned me before you came to pick me up in your, you know, car with an elevator. You know, I would have loved to have known that, you know, that the guy that I went to Burning Man with was gay.
Yeah.
That would have been great. Now, in retrospect, I should have known.
Well, maybe the fact that he thought Burning Man was a good first date should have been a clue.
Right. Or that we'd be running around wearing makeup and,
right,
you know,
because to me, Burning Man is all about naked people being bisexual with each other.
I guess that
would not have surprised
me. I don't know,
though.
I mean, you have to understand, like, I'm like, my parents are, we live in Taos, New Mexico. Like,
I know. Somebody that
they're
asks
just
you to,
straight people that
somebody
run
that
around
asks you to basically go to like an orgy circus for a first date And then the relationship was sort of an orgy circus, right?
Right. Yeah, it was.
So it sort of fit.
Okay. Yeah. No, I know.
No, but I know.
So it's not... Sometimes we just need to be hit over the head, though.
No, and I want disclosure, too. And here's one of the things that I want, that I think people should be more honest about. If you're starting to date somebody, you should let them know who in your best friend circle is your ex.
Oh, interesting.
Because, like, I have one ex that I'm crazy about. He and I were together almost 10 years. We kind of grew into brother and sister, and he's one of my closest. He's like my family. So when I get to know somebody new, I will mention him in passing, and then I will always say, you know, it's an odd thing about Paul and me. We were together for 10 years. We grew into brother and sister, and now he's my family. There's nothing weird about it. We just are pals. And there is nothing weird about it, because if there was, I would tell you. Since we broke up in 2002, we have never, like, fallen into bed together. There's never been any back and forth. Now, could there be? Well, sure. But I think we both respect the friendship enough to know we don't want it to be hinky.
Yeah.
So when I'm at your house and your best friend comes over all the time, uh-huh, and there's hinkiness, mm-hmm, and then I have to find out that your best friend is your ex.
Right.
Like, probably you should have told me that.
Oh, absolutely.
So when you don't tell me that, when people are not full disclosing,
yes,
it makes me think it's because there's something to hide.
Well, yeah.
Like every once in a while, something happens with me and my best friend. Can you all hear my finger quotes whooshing through the air? So I think that we just definitely need to be more honest in, yeah, life, not only with ourselves, but with people around us.
Well, I had a crush on someone earlier this year who I later found out had voted for Donald Trump. And and not to really necessarily, you know, go there, because I know we're all about love and life, light.
No, but
here,
that's part of the whole raising the vibration. The movement, right, was born out of the election. So let's talk about
it. Well, it was a deal breaker. I mean, honestly, I think there was a certain amount of projection on my part. I think I had, you know, I met him in yoga class. Hope he's not listening. You know, and he was just like this hot, sweaty, shirtless man.
A yoga doing Trump supporter?
That's what I said. I was just so confused.
His favorite was downward dog.
Are you lost? Like,
exactly.
What are you doing in West Hollywood? Like, yeah, singing Shanti Shanti Namaste. Yeah. I still don't actually have the answer to that. I just know that, you know, full disclosure, I needed to know that.
Well, but I just met a guy the other night who's a roommate of a friend of mine, and I was at my friend's 50th birthday party, and this kid sits down next to me, and he starts with this whole, oh, I was at your improv show at the Hollywood Improv, and it was my birthday party show,
yeah,
and my friend, you know, my friend brought me his roommate, who's my friend. And I really love what you had to say. And I heard you talking politics with Radong Chong that night. And, you know, she was really being very like, I hate Donald Trump. And you were really trying to, like, talk about how everybody has a right to boo who they are, which I believe. Mm-hmm. As Americans, isn't it great we all can be whatever we want?
Yes.
But then he started saying things, and it took almost 3 hours of conversation for him finally to admit that he voted for Trump. Like, first it was he was an independent, then it was he liked Gary Johnston, then it was, it was like, why don't they just come out and say up front,
well, because we're,
I voted for Trump.
Yeah.
Okay. But why do they hide it?
Because it's
like it's a dirty
shameful
secret.
You know, well, I mean, that's how I feel. But
I feel it's shameful, not because he's a Republican, but because they voted in somebody who'd never held an office before.
Oh, yeah.
To be the highest office in our country.
Yeah.
I mean, really, couldn't he have just sat on the school board or been a city assemblyman or something first?
Right.
To me, that's very terrifying.
That's right.
He's not a lawyer. He doesn't know the law.
No.
I mean, he's, you know, and it, just everything about him.
Yeah, join the PTA or something.
It's funny because I was just telling my best friend on the phone today that, because I have in the last however many years, I've dated two Republicans, both who wouldn't admit to be Republicans, but they were. Both claimed to be independents who didn't like anybody. Both kind of claimed to be libertarians, but I think that's what Republicans tell you when they don't want to admit they're Republicans.
Right.
And then another one who I'm not quite sure, I don't know why that was my phase, but after the election, and I told her this morning, I'm like, I don't want any more Republicans. And it's not that, like, I have Republican friends. It's not like I have anything against Republicans, but there has just in our country become such a definite difference, mm-hmm, in how we think.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be constantly battling with somebody.
No.
I just don't want it.
No, I mean, at this
point.
And
I want somebody I can be angry about the election with. I'm sorry, but I do.
No, but yeah, misery loves company.
Well, I want somebody that I can tell, like, how I actually felt.
No, I know.
What am I going to say? So I started my peace movement because your candidate won.
Yeah.
I mean, just everything in the last 7 months of my life has been.
It just goes along with being, like, you know, having your like-minded tribe. And
yes.
We don't have to, you know, hate.
No,
but,
it's not hating.
It just that's something you don't have in common, and I think I think it's important to have that in common.
I agree, and for a long time, I dated a guy in college for about almost 5 years, and we were completely sociopolitically opposite. And I said after that I would never do it again.
Uh-huh.
And then after that I started dating Paul, and we were very much on the same page. And then somewhere along the line, I was like, well, you know, but that's not a great way to judge people, and that's not fair. And now I'm kind of back to where I originally was, where I just believe that in some cases you need to be on the same page in a relationship.
In certain ways, absolutely.
I would have no problem with a quadriplegic, but it might be harder for me to date a Trump supporter who does yoga.
Right? A quadriplegic that does yoga.
Would be awesome.
That would be awesome.
That would be really awesome. I guess a quadriplegic could have somebody do yoga for them. Somebody could move them into the yoga
position. I'd like to meet a Trump supporter that's a quadriplegic.
Oh, I don't think that exists because Trump doesn't believe in any help for quadriplegics.
No.
He'd like to push them all in the pool, as my mom used to say.
Oy.
And thin the surplus population. I know. It's so hard to hold on. I feel like in the last 7 months, like, so many of us have just been holding on to humanity with our fingernails.
Well, and, you know, and our families are divided. I mean, I know I have Trump supporters in my family and just can't talk about that.
Yeah, I don't have any family. So with me, it was just friends that are. And my mom was a hardcore Democrat. She was amazing.
Mm.
And, you know, and I founded the movement on her birthday.
Oh, wow.
Because the day they announced the presidential results, the 9th of November, was her birthday.
Oh, wow.
And she was an interesting thing because my mom was very psychic. And she was always say, even when she was sick in 2015, she didn't want to do anything, didn't like, she wasn't interested in anything. But she made me sit there every day and watch the Benghazi hearings.
Interesting.
She was so into the Clintons, so into Hillary Clinton. I think more her than him. And I remember her saying, I'm not going anywhere, kid. I'm not going to die till Hillary Clinton's our president. And I thought, oh, okay, well, I don't have to worry about that. And then when she died in March, I kept thinking, I don't understand. But she didn't want to die until Hillary. And then on the 9th, I thought, oh, no.
Right.
She knew.
I was going to say, I think that might have been her little way of being just like, peace out.
I think
literally.
The universe came and said, you know what, honey? Trust me. You don't need to wait till November.
Yeah.
Come on home.
Yeah. We
That's
don't need
sad,
to see
right?
This.
But...
Yeah.
Because if that hadn't killed her, this would have.
Well, God, there were certain parts of that campaign that nearly killed me.
I know.
That
second debate.
The pee grabbing. Come on.
Yeah. And that second debate where he chased her around on the stage. I mean, it viscerally made me uncomfortable.
Yes. You know, my cousin is a politician. He ran for Congress and lost. But he was president of the state Senate in Colorado. And, but... Ever since, you know, as an only child, my cousins were like my siblings. And I remember from a very young age, I would say, you know, I'm going to be an actress. And he would say, I'm going to be president. And well, you know, he never became president per se, but he did, you know, he held office, important office in Colorado and made laws.
Oh.
That said, I always remember as a little boy, you know, he wouldn't swear, he wouldn't smoke cigarettes, he was so aware of his own public image and the things that he could do or couldn't do as a, you know, public figure.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, that's no fun. I'm going to be a Hollywood type. I can do all that. But like that is something that Trump lacks.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I just don't think he doesn't have that kind of foresight. He doesn't think about how maybe I shouldn't talk about molesting half the population, you know, on a live mic. Because you know, I'm going to want their vote
one day. Maybe I
should
brag about I can do whatever I want to do to somebody because I'm rich.
Celebrity. Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, wow. And not realize that's the douchiest thing anybody ever said. I think that's okay. But you know what scares me and what freaks me out?
But other people think it's okay.
It's not him because we know what he is.
Yeah.
What scared me the day after the election, aside from the fact that I had always been such a Hillary supporter and was so wanted her to be our president, I think she would have been such an amazing president, was that how many people really resonated with his message of, oh, that chick's a four, and look at this one, she's fat, and look at, I hate this guy, and Jeb Bush is a weak energy person, and Marco Rubio's too small, and that people thought it was okay to make fun of people like that. And then, after the election, his people became like, you know, hateful, fascist, ha, 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 we won, like that kid on The Simpsons that goes, ha, ha, all the time.
Yeah.
And then a lot of liberal people got affected by that message and also became bullies and started making fun of his wife and the kid and putting pictures of him up on a toilet and calling him bad names. And I keep telling people, and I feel, Naomi, like everywhere I go, I counsel someone.
Yeah.
And I'm either telling some Trump supporter, you're not helping by telling people they can't feel.
Right.
Or I'm telling some Hillary supporter or Bernie supporter, as the case may be, whatever it is, that it's not okay. Don't let him make you like him.
Mm-hmm.
Don't, if you're being mean and vicious and calling him a Cheeto and all these other things, you've become like him.
Right.
With just different politics.
Yeah.
The only way to fight him is fight him with kindness. Like Martin Luther King said, right? The only way, you can't fight hate with hate, you have to fight hate with love.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot become him.
No.
And that's what he wants.
Yeah.
You know, he wants us to all become just like him. Whether we're liberals or conservatives, he wants us all to become people who are like, yeah, well, F you, and do what you want, and just live for yourself, and grab somebody by the pee, and make fun of a disabled person, and kick somebody in the street, and you know that thing he said about, I could shoot someone in the street and not lose any votes. That's what he wants us all to become. Become somebody who just doesn't care what you do.
Right.
Just feels you're not accountable. And it's worked because a lot of people since November have become like that.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm hoping. That's what I fight every day with this peace movement, to get more people to kind of come back to sanity. Look, you want to keep voting Republican because you want smaller government and you want your guns and all your stuff. Great. That's your right as an American. You want to vote liberal? Fantastic. You want to vote libertarian, green, be an American socialist like Bernie Sanders, whatever you want. That's your right. You're an American. But you need to peacefully protest, and you need to speak from an educated perspective. All this name-calling and bullying, that's what scares me. That's what I want to see go away.
Yeah, yeah. The one thing that I can say for it all is at least we have, you know, Stephen Colbert and Samantha Bee.
Yeah,
and
Bill Maher.
I mean, SNL's never been so good.
SNL's amazing.
Ever. So,
I miss
you know,
it during the summer. I'm like, all these things are happening.
Yeah.
Why can't we have summer SNL?
Yeah, I know.
Can't they do like a special half-hour internet version just so that we can...
Right?
And just do the politics stories?
Yeah.
I know.
No, I know. So that's good. Like,
that's
at
great.
Least, you know, some great art will be come of it. I don't know. I'm really
march,
grappling
3 million people. I mean, people are now peacefully protesting for what's right. The Science March.
Mm-hmm.
The Workers' Day March.
Yeah.
I mean, people are getting out. Pride, right?
Right.
Pride turned into a march for everyone.
I love it.
I mean, everyone's coming together. So many straight people this year marching for the protest, for the resistance march for gay pride.
Right.
Because we're realizing that everyone's communities, including women, because we're the biggest minority, because we're actually the majority, but we allow ourselves to be a minority.
Yeah.
We're all coming together and realizing that everybody's cause is our own.
Right.
And that's so important, because as long as we stay separated and divided, we're never going to get control of this.
Yeah.
We need to come together. We need to understand that a gay person's rights are as important as a woman's rights, are as important as an African American's rights, are as important as a Jewish American's rights. Once we all band together, that majority group is nothing compared to all of us.
Right.
It becomes such a minority.
Yes.
You know, those old Trump on the White House lawn, right, with doing that toast, and it was all those old white male heads.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, what is normal? You know what I mean? Like, we have this idea that white male, able-bodied straight.
Yeah, Christian.
But since, like, who said? Like, like what?
Right, who said that was, yes.
Yeah.
They said, like, and we all listened.
Yeah.
That's the thing. They said and we believed.
It's, yeah, we, it, no.
We got to take it back. All right, we'll be right back after this. It's Raising the Vibration. My guest is the wonderful Naomi Grossman. We're listening to LA Talk Radio. Go to IamRaisingTheVibration.com. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Larry Russ, former keyboardist and vocalist for Iron Butterfly, and I'm here to tell you about that abuse is an epidemic in our world. Abuse has many forms, spousal and child abuse, sex and human traffic victims, and sexual abuse. Musicians Against Abuse wants to do something about it, and you can help. Contact maabuse.com. That's maabuse.com. Join me and let's do something about it. maabuse.com.
Alcohol-related harm affects us all. Everyone knows someone who's been touched. Alcohol-related harm ranges from lost jobs to serious mental and physical disease, from ruined family life to property damage, from violent crime to homelessness, death, or prison. Go to alcoholjustice.org and sign up for action alerts and e-news. Then you'll be ready to add your voice to many others when it's time to call for action that will reduce alcohol-related harm.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. So join me 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time at www.latalkradio.com on Channel 1. And let's explore All About Guitar.
God and Sex, a new LGBT-themed play. You can play an important part in God and Sex by donating to reach its fundraising goal. The playwright Wendy Michaels' marriage began crumbling soon after she walked down the aisle with her new husband and her maid of honor, who just happens to be her ex-lover. In a town that's all about following dreams, this is truly a dream come true story that began as a heartbreak and was made into art, bold and quirky. God and Sex at the Santa Monica Playhouse in March. You can help make that happen. GoFundMe.com/GodAndSexThePlay.
As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
When Debbie Fragner gave birth to Maddie, she imagined a world of possibilities. But when her daughter was diagnosed with cerebral palsy, a neurological condition that impacts a person's ability to move and maintain balance, she had to adjust her expectations. Cerebral palsy affects 1 in 323 children in the U.S. While this diagnosis may limit Maddie's physical abilities, it doesn't limit her ability to dream. Maddie is now 9 and has a dream to dance, which inspired the creation of the Children's Cerebral Palsy Movement, a nonprofit dedicated to the design and funding of innovative therapies that address not only the physical challenges of these children, but their dreams as well. As part of their Community Giving Day program, Whole Foods Market will donate 5% of net day sales to our movement on June 15th at their Tustin location and June 22nd in Newport Beach. Your purchases on these days will help further our cause. For more information, please call 714-746-4085. That's 714-746-4085.
Hi, my name is Michael Vaccaro. I have a groovy web series called Child of the 70s with some really groovy people in it, including Bruce Valanche, Jerry Jewell from The Facts of Life, Ted Lange from The Love Boat, comedian Judy Tenuta, Carolita White from Laverne and Shirley, Ann Walker from Sordid Lives, Amy Linka from Square Pegs, Gina Heck from Mork and Mindy. We have Johnny Hazard, Leo Forte, Terry Ray, Chuck Sakula, and LA Talk Radio legend Sheena Metal. I play this guy who idolizes a 1970s TV star, but then he gets a job as her personal assistant. You know how they say that you should never meet your personal idols? Well, you know, you can find us on YouTube, Funny or Die, Out TV, and you can also go to our website, www.theofficialchildofthe70s.com. It's groovy. Hey, did I say that already? Yeah, it's groovy. I'm a child of the
70s. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
California legislator sends Bill SB 524 to Governor Brown to protect youth against institutional abuse. This bill would regulate residential programs notorious for abusing, attempting to convert LGBT youth. Let's be the change. Every child deserves to be treated with dignity and humanity. Stand with the Los Angeles LGBT Center and SEA organization against child abuse. Support SB 524. Go to PYIA.org and let your voice be heard.
Did you know that healthcare institutions provide arts programming for patients, families, and staff because of their healing benefits? Shorter hospital stays, better pain management, and less medication. Believe in the art. Go to www.mvcaf.org and click the donate button on any page. Support the Moreno Valley Cultural Arts Foundation.
My question is about Sheriff Geary.
I was hoping that we could have that talk. You know, I know you've been asking me about Detroit.
He was a cop there, right?
He doesn't talk about it.
I've asked you for the past 2 years to confide in me.
They said they found some bones out here in the fields.
Do you think he could be connected?
No way. He's one of the good guys. He is.
The way that you lie.
Trouble Creek, now streaming on YouTube. There's something in the water.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
It's Raising the Vibration right here on LA Talk Radio. I am your host, Sheena Metal. We're at Raising the Vibration Radio. We're at LA Talk Radio. Everywhere on social media, I'm just at Sheena Metal. And of course, the movement that started all, I am Raising the Vibration of the Nation and the World, is at IamRaisingTheVibration.com. The wonderful Naomi Grossman joins me all this show. And it's wonderful to have you here, my friend. This is fantastic.
Thank you. I'm enjoying it.
I love our conversations off the air are like as if we only those, if only those went out. But it's fun to hang out with you even in between. And we need to make some dates to hang out. I know we always talk about it and then we're always too busy. But so you were talking about during the break about like how you sort of sometimes live a little recklessly. And I think I've lived too safe. So maybe as we now get older in life, you're learning to be a little more wise and I'm learning to be less wise, because I really do think you can be too safe. Do you believe that?
I mean, yeah, you can be too boring. I don't think of you as a boring person.
No, I'm not boring, but there are things where I'm a person who doesn't. I mean, from an artistic standpoint, I love to be out of my comfort zone.
Mm-hmm.
But personally, I'm not crazy about being out of my comfort zone. Like I'm not. I don't love traveling. Like, I will travel when I need to for work, but I'm not crazy about it. Like, I wouldn't go to Burning Man. Too many people, too hot. nowhere to hide. If I if somebody had a like a big Winnebago and they wanted me to go in it, I would go if there was air conditioning and a bathroom.
Right.
But just to be out there and be camping, completely not okay.
Yeah.
So that's where I think I'm more safe than you. I don't want to like backpack through Europe, or I've never understood what people do that. I don't want to go to the Mount Everest base camp. I know so many people that are like, don't you want to climb the steps at Machu Picchu? And I'm like, couldn't I just like look at it on IMAX? So I'm very city oriented. I like cities.
I mean, I understand that. Like, don't get me wrong. When I did climb the steps of Machu Picchu, I did not enjoy each step. Like, I did not like not having a Sherpa. You know, you kind of, I mean, I
oh, you did that.
I did it.
Oh my God. See, you're fantastic. This is what I'm talking about.
Well, I mean, no, but I am adventurous and I do love to travel. I would rather at Burning Man be in a Winnebago than on the dirt in a sleeping bag. Sure. But I'm more about just having the experiences. I like to, I want to lead a full life and I want to go places I've never been and do things. I want to be in a Japanese game show, and I want to get married in the middle of carnival in Brazil. And I mean, you know, I don't know. I want to, I should worry more about maybe finding the groom than, you know, where I'm going to.
Right. Maybe you'll find the groom on a Japanese game show.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about
that. See?
There you go.
Stick with me, kid.
See? Maybe that's why I'm single.
I mean, I would be on a Japanese game show if somebody asked me to.
Yeah.
But I don't really think, I think that my life has always been so full and so crazy, and there's so many things going on in my life. Like, I would never want to live, like, right in the heart of West Hollywood. And I always say
that's
when I say
that. That's
where
I live, you know.
Okay, see? I always say when I say that, if I had a job where every day I went to an office, and that was my job, probably I would want to live in the heart of a city, like downtown West Hollywood, somewhere where you can walk to everything, or someplace like the Americana in Glendale, where you live in the middle of a mall, because I would be looking for excitement. But my life brings so much excitement through my career that when I'm not doing this, I like to have like moments of just decompressing, which is why I live in the valley.
No, I like to have all the excitement right there. I don't want to have to go. I mean, I can go in my bedroom if I really need to. Well, even then, I'd like to think there's some excitement in there. But
I would imagine more than in mine, my friend.
No, but I love the idea that, you know, I look outside and there's a dozen gorgeous gay men in my pool.
Oh, I
like
do
to
like
pretend that they're
yeah.
my cabana boys, and I
really?
Let them be on a break. I mean,
I love that you love gay men as much as I do. So let me tell you something about really funny, because it's interesting.
Well, when
that
you live in West
that.
Hollywood, you have to. You know.
Interesting that you would say that. So when I was a kid and all my friends had Barbies, I had one Barbie and I had like 12 Kens. And I bought them all bathing suits and tuxedos.
Nice.
And they were always lounging around the pool with her. So either I unknowingly invented the bachelorette,
yeah,
or I knew I was an enormous fruit fly from a very young age. And now my life, that's kind of my life.
Right.
Like, I go somewhere. Like I said to somebody the other day, I was at a party and she said, "What was your party like?" And I said, "Well, it was basically like 50 gay guys, Margaret Cho and me." And she said, "Well, what kind of a, was that like an analogy for something?" And I'm like, "No, it was 50 gay guys, Margaret Cho and me."
Right.
I mean, that's you know, so I love to just be around my gay
that's
boys
so
all
funny.
The time.
I can't believe that I wasn't at that party.
Yeah, how come you weren't at that party?
Margaret, nobody told me.
How come you weren't at that party with us?
Know.
But isn't that, but that's like, do you think that's what the Barbie thing was about in the Kens? I always wonder about that.
Interesting. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I just put off a certain scent, or is it chicken or the egg? Like,
yeah.
Do they smell it about me or me them?
Now,
or?
When you were young, did you have a lot of boyfriends that turned out to be gay?
I
did.
No, I think I was just a theater kid. So,
me too.
You know, I had a lot of friends that turned out to be gay, but
yeah.
Yeah.
I had the big high school gay boyfriend, and I think I may have had two, but nobody seems to know where the other one was. Yeah, so I did.
Again, it goes back to me. I'm having those experiences now.
Oh.
I'm doing
Well, I had them when I was
younger.
I'm
being a child now.
Because I grew up in the very restrictive Orange County where nobody was allowed to utter that they were gay.
No, of course
not. And when they did, they'd get kicked out of their house and they'd come live at mine.
Although I was at OC Pride over the weekend.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
Remember, I woke up in Newport Beach with a few of them.
That was OC Pride.
Yes. So we just went. We figured, when in Rome. You know, we're here already. So we headed down to, I guess, Laguna Beach.
Okay.
There was a bar.
Okay. There used to be so many.
Oh, no. Oh, I mean, I'm sure there's lots of bars, but there's one that was truly, you know, celebrating Pride.
Oh, yeah, that's changed.
Which, honestly, it was about as exciting as the Abbey on a, you know, Tuesday morning, I think. So it wasn't
Orange County,
really all
really
that.
Exciting.
But for Orange County, it was very
exciting. I remember when Laguna was the only place you could go that had bars. And I had friends that would take me there, boys. And they were literally underground, and you had to climb downstairs to get to them.
Oh,
because
wow.
They were kind of hidden.
Huh.
So, but now I heard a lot of those bars have gone mixed. Everything's mixed now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Where was OC Pride?
It's funny. I almost turned one of them. It's kind of crazy. We... he did not end up in the bed with us later that night, but it is said that there's one of the they like to call him date rape gay from that night from this epic lesbian wedding on a yacht. Apparently this guy just really couldn't get enough of me, and to the point where he told me, you know, he'd never been with a woman, but he'd love that experience with me. La la la. It did not go there. Full disclosure. But it was interesting. I thought, again, what is it about me? What am I putting out there?
I always get the, you know, I wish I could have married you and then just been with boys. Now that boys can marry boys, I don't get that so much. But
yeah.
It used to be like, will you be my wife and then I can have 50 hot guy lovers?
Oh.
And I used to go, no, why don't they love me for me? Now I'm kind of like, God, maybe I should have married one of them and had kids. Because they would have had beautiful kids.
I'd rather just have like 50 hot lovers, personally. Oh, why do I have to have a wife?
I don't know. I always wanted to, like, well, you don't have to have a wife.
Oh, okay, good.
You can have a gay husband.
Oh.
I did that.
I had a gay boyfriend. I'm good. I guess I don't feel this need to get married. I don't have this.
I don't either. I honestly don't either.
I mean,
I sit at weddings and I feel like an alien.
Oh.
When they do the hokey pokey and the limbo and
the
macarena.
I love the macarena. I mean, listen, I love
too,
a party.
But I just feel like, wow, I guess I'm really not like other people.
Oh, I'm definitely not.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think marriage is going to phase out and I will have been one of its trailblazing, you know.
Oh, I love that. I think it's kind of phased back in since gay marriage, right? You used to be able to hide with the gays and at least there was no marriage there.
Yeah, but I think even that is going to have, they're going to realize like, oh, wait, one person my whole life? Like, they've been fighting for this right to do that. And then they're going to realize like, now we have the right to get divorced too, which is ultimately how it all ends. I'm sorry to be so negative. I know we plan to be only raising it up. Only positivity this hour.
You don't have to only positive. That's a positive thing.
But I do see that way. I don't think it's totally natural to have one person your whole life. And that's...
I don't know if I do or not. I, it's interesting. On one hand, I think as people grow, they outgrow people.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I do believe that everybody has a person.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't believe you always find that person in each life.
Yeah, I agree.
Or sometimes you find that person and they're a parent or a child or a sibling or a friend.
Mm, I like that.
But I do think we all have a soulmate. I think we have more than one soulmate. But
I do
believe everyone has a twin flame. And I also believe that we travel in pods from life to life with people, which is why people seem familiar when we encounter them. But I don't know. I think that if you want to kill a relationship, get married.
Yeah.
Because it just seems like, I mean, in some cases, no. Some of my friends are in these wonderful marriages. It's interesting because all of my best girlfriends, except for one, who's perpetually single, and interestingly enough, she's the only one that's gay. They're all in these relationships. You know, one just got married Saturday. One has been married for almost 30 years. One, they've been together for like 26 years. They're getting married finally. And there's another one I can't think of right now. They're all in these long-term relationships with these outstanding dudes that are just amazing. And I look at them and I think, like, maybe that's just not my plight for this life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's just not what I'm supposed to be doing. Maybe I'm supposed to be married to a peace movement instead.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
Maybe everybody's path is not the same. So I think for years, I kind of forced myself into these relationships with men and with women, thinking that, you know, I just need to be with somebody. I'm supposed to be with somebody. This is what I'm supposed to be doing.
Right.
And all it did was make me kind of miserable.
Right. Well, because we're looking at others and judging ourselves
right.
based on them. And
like, but shouldn't I have the white picket fence? And shouldn't I have the... You know, should, like, I have somebody.
I mean, if that's important to you,
no. It's really not.
I mean, listen, you were talking about not wanting to be so boring. You were talking about not wanting to be so safe.
Yeah.
But I see safe as boring. I would never think of you as boring. But I look at my friends who did settle, as I said it, settle,
yeah.
for, you know, white picket fences with their high school sweethearts. And... Yeah, their lives are boring. They are safe, and they are, you know, they're just not living these full lives the yeah. way I would live. That's their choice.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm not, well, it does sound like I'm judging, doesn't it?
No, but, I think you're just explaining,
you know,
that everybody's
to each their
different.
Own. I think I really thrive on... an adventure and the unknown and being fearless. This is like part of kind of my MO. And so that's, I mean, certainly not a life that is for everyone.
I agree. I think that my mom used to say something when she would be planning Christmas dinner and I would suddenly get asked to do 4 or 5 more hours on the air. And I would say, you know, how do you feel about moving the time of dinner? And she would go, oh, honey, you just come whenever you come. And aww. I said to her once, you're so good about it. Because I was her only child and her only relative. And she was kind of cooking around when my friends and I were coming. She said, honey, I learned a long time ago that you belong to the world.
Mm.
And you need to do what you can do for the world. And I'm lucky enough that sometimes you belong to me.
Ugh.
And when she got older and she was wanting me to... you know, be around more to take care of her. And I was doing the best I could driving back and forth between here and Orange County
yeah.
trying to take care of her. And she reminded me of this story she used to always tell that when I was a year and a half, she would always tell the story. I was so embarrassed when I was a teenager. We were at the sink and she was washing dishes and she had a baby sink for me. And mm-hmm. I was up on a stool and I was washing dishes in the baby sink. And the story goes that she said to me, isn't this neat? Someday you'll have little babies and then we will both be washing our dishes in the sink, except you'll be the mommy. And she said, I looked at her with this really stern face and I said, no, you have things you need to do in this life and I have things I need to do in this life. So you take care of you and I need to take care of me.
Yeah.
At the time she said she thought, like, what in the world did I give birth to this weird demon child? But when she got old and she had just had this sort of stroke, she had a thing called hypoxia where your brain doesn't get enough oxygen. So it manifested like a stroke. And she said, you know, you tried to tell me when you were a year and a half that you belonged to the world and that you had to do what you were here to do. And I don't think I ever really listened. And now I get it. And I thought, oh, my God, I just want to kill myself. My poor mom needs me. And that's what she's talking
aww.
About. But she always understood that I had always felt called. And I think you're like that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we feel called by something bigger than,
yeah,
I want to spend all my time on a relationship.
No.
Or I want to spend 6 months building a redwood patio onto my house.
Oh, no.
Or, you know, like, we
yeah.
have things to do for the world.
Yes. I do feel that way. I mean, I have been in relationships that have ended in the person, you know, when are you coming back to bed? And it's like, never. When I'm done with writing at whatever
yes.
this is that I'm writing, it's, and it may never be done. So don't wait up.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah.
I do feel like if I was supposed to be married and have kids and all and white picket fence, blah, 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 it probably would have happened for me by now. It's not to say that I couldn't still, I suppose, but it's just not on my high on my priority list.
Yeah.
I have, you know, there's certain things that I have to do in this lifetime and they're going to get done.
I feel the same way.
And that's not one of them. So
I remember my boyfriend in college, he was very much we're going to get married and have a normal life because he's from normal people and they all had normal lives, what I like to now call muggles. And I remember him saying once, so when are you going to stop taking shows on the weekend nights? I was like, never, because those are the best gigs. You
yeah.
get offered a Friday, Saturday night gig, you jump at it. It's like, but when is that going to stop? When is it ever just going to be you go to work 9 to 5 and then you come home and you spend your nights and your weekends with me?
Right.
Like, that's never going to happen.
Right.
And that's probably when that relationship started dying.
Yes, for
no
sure.
No offense to him. He was a perfectly nice guy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But never. That's when never.
Yeah.
And,
you know, I have this... You talked about last year as being such a kind of epic year for you. And,
yeah.
And it was for me as well, especially because I actually had the fortune of reuniting with an ex.
Oh.
Who, this was someone who, I don't know if you remember this story. It was a star-crossed love affair. It ended in him dangling himself off the Santa Monica Pier and almost dying.
No.
Yeah.
Because it was just like crazy, heated, crazy.
Well, you were talking earlier about being friends with your exes. I don't have that.
I only do with one.
Yeah, I was going to say, my exes, like, we're in comas or, you know, like, we don't end in a quiet way. It always, it ends in fire or...
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, this guy ended actually in him in a coma for a week, in the ICU for a month, and with a $2.5 million hospital bill, which fortunately, because he was a bipolar, broke, alcoholic, drug addicted, unemployed, uneducated, illegal, illiterate, Mexican sewing machine repairman.
Oh my God.
He was
That's a show, right?
Right?
Okay.
Oh yeah. He was actually only responsible for 10% of that. But even then, that's $250,000. That's a bill I got. And had I been married to him,
right,
would have been mine.
Yes.
Anyway, there was this at the time when this happened, it was 2002. It was another lifetime ago. I really had no choice but to put him back on a plane. I mean, I knew it was very obvious that this was just over my head. It was more than I could handle. So, you know, we said goodbye. We never broke up. We just said goodbye. And I mean, I'll never forget the tears streaming down my face as I, you know, put him back on that plane. And we never, and that was the end. Until last year, I happened to go to a Comic-Con in Mexico, and you know, it's honestly, it was like a junkie being faced with just like a little bit of heroin. Like, just,
did you know he was going to be there?
I mean, I didn't know, but I knew he was in Mexico,
okay.
And I couldn't.
But Mexico is a big country.
Yeah, but this was a big love. So, yes.
So he knew you were going to be there because you were appearing there.
I made sure he knew.
Okay.
I didn't speak to him directly.
I like that you're just being honest about it all.
Yeah.
Okay.
Again.
So you kind of thought you might maybe see him hoping to
imagine
see him.
Imagine the junkie with just like a little bit of heroin.
Sure. So you let him know you were going to be there.
I shot it up just a and yes, so he showed, and let me tell you, it was the most, it was like this crazy, cathartic, sexy, scary, excited. It was going back to that fearlessness that I said. Believe me, a little part of me was like, I made sure a couple friends knew where I was staying, and this is an emergency contact, and because who knows, you know, this guy has a head injury. He knows that, you know, I'm worth more than I was once upon a time. Like,
sure.
I don't know. This could end. People kidnap each other in Mexico. You don't know how this could end. But at the same time, I had to live that. I needed to experience it. And I'm so glad I did, because let me tell you, not only did I have the sweet satisfaction of being up on a stage where there was literally this barricade of Mexicans. I mean, imagine like Trump's wall full of people staring up at me, screaming like, "Te amo, Naomi," and with these signs, you know, "Marry me, Naomi." I mean, and of
really?
Course, yes. And
so
he,
you're like huge in Mexico.
Huge in Mexico.
Is it
who
because
knew?
People know you speak Spanish?
I mean, that helps.
And that you have family in Argentina?
Well, yes. And I do think it's just part of the sort of Mexican personality.
Okay.
Like, I, you know, I've been all over the world, like the Swedish, much more sort of introverted, and the Russians, they were pretty crazy. I don't know, like, I just think like Mexicans are an especially sort of effusive,
yeah,
passionate people.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, and kind of, and childlike, you know, they came with bearing all these gifts, like, yeah, like, it was lovely. I mean, I couldn't choose between my fans, but they were among my favorites.
And then you ran into him.
And of course, he was among them. And you have to imagine, he'd never seen American Horror Story. I mean, he'd missed the memo. Last time he saw me on a stage, I was doing improv with more people on stage than there were in the audience. And so here he is like, what? And of course, we all want our exes to see us succeed, but rarely do we get the satisfaction of actually getting to watch them see us succeed, you know? So that was just incredibly satisfying, personally. And of course, then I also got the added satisfaction of being able to finally sit him down and tell him the story. I mean, he honestly does not remember what happened that fateful night that he took this terrible spill. And
wow.
Yeah. So 14 years later to hear about, you know, this head injury from the horse's mouth. I mean, he'd only heard, oh, you had an accident, you know, from his mom. What does his mom know? She wasn't there. But to hear it from me, I mean, I was there. I saw it. I watched it. I sat by his bedside while he, you know, came to. I mean, it was pretty epic. And of course, for him to be able to look me in the eye and like tears. I mean, this is like this linebacker of a man. And for him to just sit there and say, you know, you were the greatest thing that ever happened to me, and I effed it up. I mean, believe me, that's all I wanted. I mean, we were talking about like, okay, now I'm done. That was
so
one of those moments.
Did you have any urge to reunite with him?
I mean, I'm not going to say that nothing happened that weekend, but
because we are talking about Naomi Grossman.
Of course, come on.
The queen of adventure.
Right. That said, it's interesting, all the time leading up to that, people would say, oh, but you could never get back with him. And I would say, because I was never really done with him.
Yeah.
Now that I had him, you know, I think part of me was like, no, you're right. I am done with him. Like, I mean, I'm not going to say a part of me doesn't still absolutely love him. And just like you said, we were definitely in another life.
Yeah.
King, queen of the Mayan, you know,
right,
people or
right,
whatever. But, you know, I do feel like I am meant for other things. And as much as back in, you know, 2001, that was a thing, I think I'm in a new place right now. And I have to be honest with myself.
I have one of those, too, and it has not been resolved. But it was one of those that I really thought at the time, maybe the only time I ever thought this is really my thing. This is my one. And then it ended very badly because of somebody else in the mix. You know, when somebody doesn't tell you that their best friend is actually their ex.
Oh, right.
Who's not over them. And some, you know, trouble causing on that person's behalf. And that person then making everyone draw lines. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, the person I was dating drew that line. Mm-hmm. And it's been, it'll be 2 years in the summer and, you know, I've heard once, but it was still more, I'm still mad at you because what you did. And I was kind of like, I didn't really do anything, but I don't really know what you're talking about. And then that did not get resolved. Mm-hmm. Who knows if it ever will? Who knows if it ever will? But like you said about dodging a bullet.
Yeah.
I'm so glad it didn't happen.
Oh, my God.
Because now looking back at the way that whole thing was handled, would you have wanted that person to be somebody you were dating? I mean, and it made me learn a lot about me, because for many months, and at that same time, my mom was sick and then died. There was a lot of like, why? Because we do that, right?
Right.
But the bottom line is this, and I learned this, and I think in this I learned, and I talked about this. I did a Raising the Vibration, iamraisingthevibration.com post where I talked about learning to value yourself. And I think that was the moment through that catharsis of healing through that, I learned to value myself. Because the bottom line is this, if somebody sits across from you and tells you, you're the total package, quote unquote. You're the thing they've been looking for. Yet then they will walk away from you with not a word because somebody that they dated for a couple of months, a decade and a half ago, decides to tell them you did something and you don't even know what was said. And they believe it. that's not your person.
Right.
That's your answer right there.
Right.
Anybody who is really your person would come to you first. And that applies to family. It applies to friends. It applies to a work situation. It applies to love. Mm-hmm. If somebody doesn't even have the decency to call you up and say, you know, so-and-so said you did this, 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 and this, but I love you, so I want to hear it from you.
Right.
If somebody just believes that person and disappears, then that person, that job, that family member, that was a person who was not meant to be in your life.
Right.
Because like Barbara Tarbuck, the wise Barbara Tarbuck said, sometimes it's just them. And so, and it's in life having to deal with that disappointment of knowing that sometimes somebody who you can feel you were with in another life. Mm-hmm. And that was another lesson I learned from that, and maybe one you learned from the Mexican gentleman, is that sometimes just because you have a soul connection with somebody doesn't mean it's going to happen in this lifetime.
No, I know. Exactly.
And there's no reason for why, just because the universe says that's why.
I mean, I get why I was the best thing that ever happened to him. I mean, this
is
a guy
who,
since we broke up, well, broke up, we never broke up, since we had to say goodbye, he's been in and out of jail, both here and in Mexico, and has three baby mamas.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
He's been very busy.
He
should have kept dangling off the pier. Kept him out of trouble.
Yeah, no. He needed to stay on the right side of the guardrail. He would have had a really different life. And I would have too. And so who knows? You know, he actually likes to take some credit to my success. He thinks that, you know, if it weren't for all the stories I've given him, that, you know, I wouldn't have, let's say, one of my solo shows, because he is the star of one of them. You know, and that's, of course, has opened doors that have led me to maybe where I am today. I think that's not quite fair. I think I had more to do with my success than he did. Thank you very much. But it's true. It's about living, you know, full lives, full of adventure. That's for sure.
Yeah.
For me,
well,
anyway.
And just learning the lessons. I feel like every day there's a lesson in it. Mm-hmm. And every day you learn something. You know, as I learned that half a dozen people in my life were not meant to be in my life, I learned that you were meant to be in my life. So as you learn that some people don't work, you're also learning that some people do work. And back to what we talked about in the last hour, Naomi, that you have to kind of, you know, accentuate the positive and eliminate the negative, as the song goes.
Yes.
You have to not think about as much about who's leaving your life as about who you're keeping in your life.
Yeah.
Be thankful for the people that you're learning belong with you.
Yes.
And don't worry about the people that you've learned don't belong with you.
Right.
And it's hard to do that.
I mean, it's like,
because we hate loss. We're humans.
Right. I mean, I will say, like, when I was, you know, let go from the Groundlings, and that was like my life.
How could the Groundlings let you go?
I mean, they did me the greatest favor.
Oh.
No, I mean, that's what they do. It's like a
they let people go.
Pyramid scheme, and I got to the very top
of
it.
It's like an improv
cult. I don't want to say pyramid scheme. It sounds like it's
an improv cult.
No, well, a little bit.
You're no longer spontaneously drank the Kool-Aid.
Well,
that's it. I'll never get my Groundlings now.
That's okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
You're going to be fine.
I think I'm going
to
live.
At a certain point, you get to the very top, and either you're in or out, and I was out.
Okay.
But that's just how they run things. But it really did. I did think that would
be
the end of my life.
Yeah.
It was over at that point. Not realizing that they were really setting me free for whatever was next for me.
Yeah.
You know, at the time, I couldn't imagine doing anything else than just, you know, 2 to 3 minute sketch comedy on Melrose. That's what I always dreamt of doing. But now I realize, like, no, F that. I want much bigger, much better than that. And,
When I worked at commercial radio, every time they'd let a show go, I would panic till I got the next one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I walked away for a while, and I wasn't going to do one. And I built a music show that's coming on after this. I built a music show on my own, and then I brought that here when I started my daily show here, and I built my shows here, and now I have built a support system for myself so that if anything ever happened and LA Talk Radio decided not to broadcast anymore or whatever, I would be okay and there would be places that I can go.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to learn the lesson that I had to build my own stuff up and make my own job security. Because there's no security in this business if you're relying on other people.
Right. But it's also about, like, you know, one door opens and
absolutely
the other closes. Like, you,
Yeah, and you find ways to set your life up, or at least I did in my 40s, find ways to set up my life so that if a door does close, everything doesn't have to close. Uh-huh. That I can keep going.
Right.
Because right now, if I had to go out on my own and just do a podcast myself on a website, I could do it successfully, bring my sponsors, and I still would bring my audience. I mean, I could do it if I had to. Yeah. I don't want to do it because I love being here.
Yeah.
But nothing in this world is ever forever.
No, it's not.
And so it never occurred to me, and I think it doesn't when we're young actors, to build your own security in your mm-hmm. life. You know, you've built a brand with your one-woman shows.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll always be able to do them.
Yeah.
Whether or not somebody else is hiring you to come and do a TV show or a movie or
right.
whatever. So you have that security to rely on. And then every other job you get is just amazing gravy on top of that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, but more importantly, those solo shows are what drive me.
And
they
that.
Feed me.
Yes, that's
and
your, that's
I'm
your
happy
art.
Whether they're making me money or not, maybe not always, but that's what keeps me, that's what gets me up in the morning.
Yeah.
That's what I am feel I'm meant to be here to do.
It's wonderful. You're amazing, my friend. Will you come back and we'll do this again sometime?
Of course.
And you are truly understand raising the vibration. And this 2 hours just flew by.
Oh, it sure did.
Where can people find you online?
Oh, boy. Oh, no hate mail, though. Now
Why
we know how I feel about
mail?
Trolls. Because we... Okay.
No one's going to send you hate mail.
Okay.
This is all love, this audience.
All right. Good, good, good. At Naomi W. Grossman.
Beautiful.
Yes. Somebody, across the board.
Somebody may send you like New Age love.
Oh,
like
I love
namastes
that.
Namastes and hearts. And
it is true. The Pepper fans are a very special breed. I can tell them a mile away when I go to these horror conventions. There's the guys that, you know, are flocking for Freddy Krueger and, you know,
oh,
Jason.
He's lovely, too.
But Pepper fans are just a whole nother type of people. So
it's amazing.
Yeah.
I love that story. So if you missed any of those links, you can also go to Raising the Vibration Radio, LA Talk Radio, on social media at Sheena Metal. And of course, I am raisingthevibration.com, the movement that started all. Please go like our Facebook page. Join us. We would be honored. We're over 1,800 souls now and so very proud to be so. Every week on the show, I bring on somebody who understands the idea of raising the vibration and is perpetually working to make the world a better place. And my friend Naomi Grossman, certainly no exception to that. Until we see you next week, Monday from 7 to 9 p.m. right here on LA Talk Radio. Keep believing. Keep having faith. Keep thinking positive. Keep raising the vibration. I love y'all, and I'll see you next week.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to